So there's a growing interest both in government and the private sector and philanthropy in the identification of 21st century moonshots. So in the same way that President Kennedy said, let's put a man on the moon, we decided to sequence the human genome. President Obama unveiled support for the BRAIN Initiative, which is aimed at dramatically increasing understanding of how the brain processes and encodes information. Elon Musk has said, I want to die on Mars, but not on impact. What do you think are some of these grand challenges or 21st century moonshots?
That was Tom Khalil from the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy. He wants to know what innovations will change our world in the year ahead. You're listening to the World Affairs Podcast. We bring you new perspectives, global stories, and conversations that matter. I'm Jane Wales. Today we're asking two innovators to discuss their work. One is working on drone development, and the other is focused on mosquitoes. Yes, mosquitoes. Let's listen.
There is some magic in, this concept of dreaming something up and then that thing being developed to a level that it can really influence how the world works. Andreas Raptopoulos, I'm the co-founder and CEO of Matternet. I grew up in Greece, in Athens, and I think the first bug that got into my mind is that we can do things that can influence generations later. A lot of our way that we do things has transitioned into the digital domain. But still, when it comes to very, very basic needs around, moving atoms, moving matter, things like food or medicine, we're still stuck with the very old tools, right? So, that the idea that started sort of developing in my mind was how could we take on the transportation problem by using today's technologies? And quadcopters, multirotors, UAVs, drones, as most people call them, is a new technology development that has basically fed off the smartphone revolution. This technology advancement enables us to build a new class of vehicles that can auto-navigate and can fly themselves. And it can do it at with a reasonably high degree of reliability, and it can do it for a very, very low cost. We basically articulated this thought that networks of these vehicles would revolutionize logistics for lightweight items, and to be more precise, would revolutionize logistics at the local level for lightweight items, and they could represent the opportunity to leapfrog road infrastructure in the same way that mobile telephony allowed us to leapfrog putting copper lights in the ground. And that premise is the basic premise upon Matternet was founded. So we started focusing on the use of this technology to transport diagnostics and medicine in places that don't have good roads, like many, many places in Africa and Southeast Asia. At first, everybody thought we were completely crazy. The people that, extended us some more faith on that and said, okay, let's understand what you have in mind, they still saw the limitation of range and payload capacity that comes with these small vehicles as a limitation that's very hard to overcome. What was amazingly interesting from the beginning is that although the proof points were there, somehow the world seemed to really appreciate this idea. And I think, of course, drones in 2011, much more than they are today, they were only known as a tool for war, as a weapon, and there was a lot of negative public reception around them. So when the public start saying that, wow, there can be a positive use of this technology and these guys are pursuing it, we received a lot of support and a lot of, doors open because of that.
While Andreas and his team employ drones to transport goods to remote parts of the world, our next guest is relying on mosquitoes to make a difference. Rather than transporting medicines to treat malaria, he's working to alter the creatures that carry the disease. anti-malarial mosquitoes. That's his moonshot, and an important one it is.
My name is Anthony James. I'm a distinguished professor at the University of California, Irvine, and the departments of microbiology and molecular genetics and molecular biology and biochemistry. My basic training was in genetics and developmental genetics, so I was interested in how simple systems are organized and the genetics that were involved in that through development. It's sometime later during my postdoc work, I had the opportunity to switch fields and a challenge put out by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation to bring new technologies into the field of parasitology included people who could possibly work on the insect vectors of the major diseases. At the time, there was virtually, and I'm using the word virtually literally, no molecular work being done with mosquitoes, molecular biology type of work being done with mosquitoes. And so I got in on the ground floor some time back, and the challenge was to see if I could use my training to have an impact on the terrible scourge that these diseases represent. So the first question was, does genetics have something to offer to controlling the transmission of these diseases? And other people had asked that question before and answered it yes. And then my question was, okay, how can we do this with molecular biology? You know, we had both the benefits of and the drawbacks of starting from scratch. And so we could do anything, and that was pretty exciting. But then, of course, when you can do anything, you have to do everything, at least when you start out. And so we just kind of, you know, we really liked the idea of building genes that would confer resistance to pathogens and then being able to put these in the population. So from day one, when we didn't have anything, people were telling us, well, you know, they will never let you do that. And the major concern that people often express is that they're concerned that there's an off-target effect. That is, most people really don't care what we're going to do with mosquitoes, and they understand that, you know, this could have an impact on malaria. But they're worried that if we did something to them, that it would have an impact on a non-target species. And so we have built in to this plan or the strategy ways to minimize the off-target effects. So the genes we make only work in the targeted mosquitoes. We're not talking about removing the mosquitoes from the environment. So if they have a niche in the environment that they fulfill, they're still there. They're just incapable of transmitting malaria. I don't feel like, as a scientist, I'm in a position to force people to adopt this technology. What we do is we demonstrate its potential utility, and then the people who live in disease endemic countries can evaluate that and then make some decisions about whether or not they really want to try to use this.
Moonshot ideas are very hard to execute on because you have to somehow figure out all the steps that will lead you to the prize at the end. You know, you start from today, so you have to take increments towards that, you know, amazing future several years into the future, and figure out a way to go there by satisfying the practical needs of how do you survive as a startup that is pursuing this, right? So, you know, it's really hard, and creating any new space is hard, creating any new industries is hard. I would say that, you know, we haven't yet proven that moonshot ideas and pursuing moonshot ideas to achieve great impact works. We're still out to prove this, right? The way that we see change working, especially here in Silicon Valley, it usually comes from incremental steps that are being taken. The downside of the classic Silicon Valley recipe is that we leave some of the world's grandest challenges unaddressed, right? So I think we belong in this new wave of startups that think that, no, we should be working on the problems that really matter, and we should be, you know, trying to, you know, first of all, fully recognize the challenge. It's hard to bring a moonshot idea to fruition. Once we level with the challenge and we understand it's a big challenge, we should be smart enough to figure out what are all the steps to make that happen.
I'm amongst that group of people who believe that we actually did put people on the moon and get them safely back a while back. And at the time, I'm sure when people were thinking about that, it was a considerable challenge. But very much like the way we view it, it was an engineering challenge. And you can break it down into finite components and start addressing those components. And along the way, you discover things that have you know, ancillary benefits that were not necessarily the object of your study, but have spun off and you know, and had a big impact on society. So we can conceive of these ideas, you know, as large, big moonshots. We recognize that the incremental steps that get us there may actually give us things in the interim that could work with as well.
Generally, moonshot ideas are fundamentally disruptive, right? And disruptive, I mean, here in the Valley, we use it as a positive word, but it's not a positive thing, right? I mean, when you disrupt, it means that you destroy something, and that something has been created as part of a process that may be deeply rooted in, you know, human psychology or our political system or, you know, our user behavior, whatever it is. In this case of, you know, Matternet, we are trying to do something that challenges the way that our airspace works. And because with things that fly, we have our own emotional reaction to them, like, you know, and there's all these, you know, dystopian scenarios about Skynet and all these other things that, you know, we've been seeing in the sci-fi movies. Making this work means like reevaluating this framework.
If you think about Silicon Valley, there's a tremendous amount of innovation there, but I think that there's also a very strong business sense involved. So I think there's a little bit of a divorcing of that, but I think the same kind of mindset applies. I mean, it's the ability to visualize something that you think will be a game changer and then have the necessary skill set to put together what may already be there that can contribute to that. And at the same time, invent the new stuff that's missing. And so you can fill in the spaces. I've seen and done things that I never would have imagined that, you know, that I would have seen and done. And, you know, I mean, to be the, you know, first to put genes into mosquitoes, you know, be the first to build a mosquito that's resistant to human malaria parasites at 100%, you know, and then to be, you know, with this group of people that for this particular system of population modification, you know, being the first to have a gene drive in there, that's, you know, that's been kind of exciting.
We are in an era where big thinking now is embraced and we start to have proof points that it actually works. You know, we hope, you know, one of the responsibilities that we take upon our shoulders as Matternet is proving that, you know, not just we can be successful, but this as a method of thinking works, right? And, you know, having in your thinking, you know, the greater like social good as a component of what you're striving towards is something that should be happening, and it's not just an afterthought, right? So, you know, we accept the responsibility that, you know, it's not just us that we are, you know, it's not just that we try to survive and become a strong company that influences our space. It's also that we are basically part of a wave, and we hope to be a positive example that people can show to and can point to and can say, you know, we know that it's possible to take on a moonshot challenge.
Please don't think that I'm elevating myself to the status of Jenner, because I'm not, okay? But, you know, when he first started inoculating people with cowpox, you know, as a way to prevent smallpox, I mean, it was quite revolutionary. I would say very bold, and it, you know, it obviously took a while to catch on, but it did work. And I'm not saying that, you know, what we're doing is anywhere near the magnitude and impact of what he was doing, but it's, it, you know, if he's a big B bold and we're a little B bold, you know, we're kind of in that same sort of thing. And, you know, I don't understand the arguments for being timid. I do understand the arguments for being careful, and I think that we know enough now about ways to be careful, how to be careful, and how to deal with certain things. But I don't think that being timid about things is actually going to help. I think it's going to actually make things worse. And I think that's the history of infectious diseases. If you don't do anything, it's going to get worse, period.
What is the initial condition that makes someone, first of all, want to pursue something that nobody else is pursuing? The fundamental motivation is one where you really are sort of aware of how short one life is. At least for me, it always bothers me to think that I can waste this opportunity to somehow contribute to the pool. And I think, you know, for me, that is the key motivation, right? It's almost a way to win against death, to say that I'm going to actually do something that will be meaningful, and a generation after me, you know, will get to use this. The fundamental motivation makes you cultivate a level of passion that makes you want to ignore and come in with a beginner's mind into a quest like this, not thinking about all the problems that will arise in your way, but have a fundamental sense of optimism that, you know, it's all a journey, and I will figure out a way. If there is a way, I will figure it out. If there's not a way, I will still figure it out, to basically overcome those difficulties and make something happen. And I feel fortunate that the world, I live in a time that the world recognizes that and the world supports that.
So people always ask me, you know, do I really think we're going to be able to eradicate malaria? And it's daunting. I mean, there's no question about it. I guess the way I feel is, well, if you don't do anything, the answer is no, we're not going to eradicate. You can wake up in the morning and you can find a million reasons for not doing things. I mean, there's just, you know, it's going to hurt. You know, I'm hungry. There's just, you know, you can find lots of reasons for not doing anything. But the key to moving these kinds of things ahead is to find those few reasons for doing it and then actually doing them. And people say, well, this is hard. Well, yeah, it's hard. You know, if it was easy, it'd already be done. And so, but that doesn't, just because it's hard doesn't mean you don't try. And so, you know, my feeling is that as scientists, in the area that I am in, which was sort of a translational area, you know, they're basic discoveries and sort of the applied stuff, and I'm in that, I bridge those gaps there. You know, our job is to find out how to make it work.
That's all for this episode of the World Affairs Podcast. If you'd like to hear more on this topic, visit our media library at worldaffairs.org. There you'll find the full conversation with Tom Khalil. He was in conversation with Alphabet Chairman Eric Schmidt, as well as many other discussions of innovations, including a conversation I had with Walter Isaacson, the biographer of Steve Jobs. So thank you for listening. We hope you'll keep the conversation going. I'm Jane Wales. Thank you for listening.